This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for November 2016. Well, the great thing, of course, is that we have much longer nights now. There's plenty to see in the evenings, and one can even get up early. In fact, as I did the morning I recorded this, and make some observations before dawn. So that's great. Well, soon after sunset, that lovely part of the sky with Cygnus and Lyra, with their bright stars Deneb and Vega, is setting over towards the west. A rather more empty part of the sky is towards the south and the southwest. It contains the square of Pegasus. The four stars that make up the square, top left one is called Alpheratz, which actually is Alpha Andromedae, and that is a way to start finding that lovely galaxy M31 in Andromeda. And on the night sky webpage, I have two ways of finding it. One can star hop, moving round and up to the left of Alpheratz, and then sharp right to find it. Or you can go to Cassiopeia, which is almost overhead. And the V, the right-hand V, actually points straight down towards Andromeda. That's well worth finding. And at the beginning of November, at the end, when there's no real moonlight, you have a chance too of finding M33 in Triangulum, much, much fainter, and you'll probably need binoculars to see it. To me, it looks like a little bit of tissue paper stuck on the sky. So over to the southeast, we have another lovely region of the sky. Higher up at the moment is Taurus, with the two open clusters, the Pleiades higher up, and below and to the left, the Hyades. The lovely red star, a red giant called Aldebaran, looks as though it's part of the Hyades cluster, but is in fact about halfway there. And then rising above the horizon as time goes on through the night is Orion, the three stars of Orion's belt pointing up towards the Hyades and the Pleiades. And of course, in the Sword of Orion, below the central star of the belt, is that wonderful nebula, the Orion Nebula, called M42. And way over to the east, you might just see rising Gemini. The two bright stars are Castor and Pollux, Castor being the higher one, and they are the heads of the heavenly twins. And finally, if one looks up at Cassiopeia and moves leftwards, down towards Perseus, about halfway between, with binoculars, you'll see two little clusters of stars. It's called the Perseus Double Cluster. It's a beautiful object in a small telescope. Well, what about the planets? Well, in fact, we can see all the bright ones this month, but not brilliantly well, I think. Jupiter is the only planet that can be seen in the pre-dawn sky this month, rising some 2.5 hours before the sun at the start of November. But by about 2:20 UT, or GMT as it will be then, by the end of the month. On the 1st of November, it will lie some 20 degrees above the southeastern horizon, an hour before sunrise, and some 10 degrees higher by month's end. Though at its smallest and dimmest, it still has a magnitude of -1.7 and shows a 32 arc second disk. It remains in Virgo throughout the month and initially lies just 2 degrees below Porrima, or Gamma Virginis, and sinks slowly southwards until by month's end it lies about halfway between Porrima and Spica, which is Alpha Virginis. So with a small telescope, early risers should be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere and perhaps some of the four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Well, Saturn's been around for a long time now. It's still visible low in the southwest after sunset. But it's only some 10 degrees above the horizon 45 minutes after sunset. So not too easy to see. However, as the month progresses, it will sink lower and become harder still to see. It lies in the southern part of Ophiuchus, some 7 degrees up and to the left of Antares in Scorpius. One can't really hope for a sharp view, but you should be able to spot the wide-open ring system. Sadly now, Saturn is moving towards the southern part of the ecliptic, so for quite a number of years will only be seen at low elevations. Perhaps it's time for a trip to the southern hemisphere. Mercury. Well, Mercury shining at magnitude -0.5 with a disk some 5 arc seconds across becomes visible low in the southwest after sunset by about the third week of November, and slowly climbs higher in the sky until it will reach its furthest angular distance from the sun in mid-December, and it might just be spotted close to Venus on the 23rd of the month. Mars has also been visible for many months now. It's moving quickly eastwards through eastern Sagittarius and Capricornus. It dims from magnitude plus 0.4 to plus 0.6 during November. The red, I actually think salmon pink planet, can be seen low above the southern horizon throughout the month, but with a disk only about 7 arc seconds across, no surface features will be seen. Venus, in the west, sets some 2 hours after the sun at the start of the month, but an hour later by month's end, as it begins to dominate the evening sky. Its brightness increases from minus 4 to minus 4.2 magnitude during the month, while the angular size of the disk increases from 14 to 17 arc seconds. So that would mean more light is reflected in principle per unit area. But as it does so, its phase reduces from 78 to 70%, so less of the surface is illuminated by the sun from where we see it. And that explains why the brightness changes so little. Venus is moving eastwards, leaving Ophiuchus on the 9th to go into Sagittarius, where it passes over the teapot and will be just 7.5 arc minutes below its lid star, which is called Lambda Sagittarii. That's shining, by the way, at magnitude 2.8. And that'll be on the 17th, so that's a thing to look out for. So, finally, what about some highlights? Well, we do have some meteor showers in November. So in the hours before dawn, November gives us a chance to observe meteors from two showers. The first, that is thought might produce some bright events, are the northern Taurids, which have a broad peak of around 10 days, but normally give relatively few meteors per hour. The peak is around the 10th of November, and pleasingly, the moon is in the first quarter on the 7th. So in the first week of November, will have set by midnight. That will help. The meteors arrive from comet 2P/Encke. Its tail is especially rich in large particles, and this year we may pass through a relatively rich band. So it's possible that a number of fireballs might be observed. The better known November shower is Leonids, which peaks on the night of the 17th-18th. Sadly, the moon will be just after full, and so will hinder our view. As one might expect, the shower's radiant lies within the sickle of Leo, and meteors could be spotted from the 15th to the 20th of the month. The Leonids enter the atmosphere at 71 kilometers per second, which is pretty fast. It might be worth having a look and even trying to photograph them, perhaps an exposure of 30 seconds, full aperture, at perhaps an ISO of 800 or 1600, because you just might capture a bright fireball. Up to 15 meteors an hour could be observed if near the zenith. The Leonids are famous because around every 30 years, a meteor storm might be observed when the parent comet 55/Temple-Tuttle passes close to the sun. In 1999, 3,000 meteors were observed per hour, but we are now halfway between these impressive events. Hence, we expect a far lower rate. Well, as I've mentioned, on the Jodrell Bank Night Sky website, it tells you how to find Andromeda, and when there's little moon in the sky, you have a chance also of seeing M33 in triangulum. Should be quite easy with binoculars, and if it really is a dark sky and there's not much light pollution, you can even see Andromeda with your unaided eye. On November the 2nd, after sunset, you have a chance of seeing Venus, Saturn, and the crescent moon. It's a very thin crescent moon. It'll lie above Saturn, which will be magnitude plus 0.5, whilst over to the left of Saturn will lie Venus at magnitude minus 4. And on the 5th of November, before sunrise, so perhaps not too many fireworks then, Jupiter will lie above Porrima in Virgo. So around 1 hour before sunrise, looking towards the east-southeast, Jupiter will be seen lying in Virgo, Porrima Gamma Virginis, and above Spica, Alpha Virginis. So it's down there in the constellation Virgo. November the 15th, really all night, the full moon is close to the Hyades cluster, moving gradually away to the left. The moon actually moves surprisingly quickly across the sky, and so if you're tracking it with a telescope, you have to have a different tracking rate than if you're tracking the stars, nebula, or galaxies. On November the 20th, about 1 hour before sunrise, you could see a third quarter moon close to Regulus in Leo. In fact, they're going to be within about 3 degrees apart. That might be worth looking for. Sadly, of course, many of these, it will be cloudy, particularly up in the north of England, where I live, but you never know, you have a chance. And another thing I have on the website, always something about the moon, and this time there's a picture I took of the full moon pointing out the individual mare. So with binoculars or even your unaided eyes, you will have a chance to spot them and gradually learn the face of the moon. So plenty of time to observe the heavens. Let's hope for some clear nights this month. Good hunting.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our Antipodean listeners, here's Claire Brotherton with the night sky where you are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the November Jodcast from Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. As Scorpius or Tamato Amawi sets in the west, his arch enemy and our summer constellation Orion rises towards the east along with Taurus and Canis Major. The bright star Antares, which marks the heart of the Scorpion, is also known as Rehuat Amawi. It represents one of the four po or pillars that hold Ranganui, the sky father, up in the sky. It sits just above the southwestern horizon at around 11 p.m. at the beginning of the month. These four po form the basis of a celestial compass, a map of the night sky that was used to navigate the vast oceans of our planet and bring our ancestors to Aotearoa, New Zealand. The other three po are marked by Matariki, the Pleiades, Tautoru, the belt of Orion, and Takarua, Sirius, which line up along the eastern horizon. Matariki supports one of Rangi's shoulders and marks the rising point of the sun at the winter solstice. Takarua, Sirius, supports the other shoulder and is the closest bright star to the sun's rising point at the summer solstice. These two stars represent the extent of the sun's movement throughout the year. In between, rising directly east is Tautoru, or the belt of Orion, marking the rising point of the sun at the time of the equinox. Stretching from Scorpius around to Orion is Te Waka o Tamariti, or Tamariti's canoe, which lines up along the horizon in our evening sky. The front of the canoe is marked by the tail of Scorpius, with the sting representing the beautifully carved wood that adorns the prow. The star at the end of the scorpion's curving tail marks the place where the bow meets the water, whilst the bright orange star Antares marks the crest of a wave as the Great Waka glides through the waters of the Milky Way. The southern cross marks the anchor Te Punga, and the pointers Alpha and Beta Centauri are the anchor line Te Taura. The key seasonal markers of Takarua Sirius and Rehuat Antares are on either side. Orion marks the stern of the canoe, with the elaborately carved stern post rising all the way up from red Betelgeuse to bluish Rigel. A tall mast rises from the Waka all the way to Akana, high in the south, which at magnitude 0.46 is the brightest star in the southern constellation of Eridanus, the river, and the 10th brightest in the night sky. A little below Akana are two small fuzzy patches of light, the large and small Magellanic clouds, which mark the Waka's sails. One story tells of Tamariti sailing across the sky in his Waka with all the stars in kete or baskets. He places the key seasonal and navigational stars in their correct positions in the sky, but finds he has lots of smaller stars left over. So he capsizes his Waka, spilling all the smaller stars into the sky, forming Te Ikaroa, or the Milky Way. Another story tells of Tamariti scattering bright pebbles in the dark, lightless sky to help guide his way home. The pebbles became the stars, and the wake of his Waka forms the Milky Way. The sky we see in the mid-evening in October-November each year is, in fact, the same sky we see just before sunrise around June, the time we celebrate Matariki, or Maori New Year. It is said that the bright star Canopus, or Atutahi, the Araki, or High Chief of the Heavens, pulls up the anchor at the start of the year, starting the Waka in motion. During the year, you can track the progress of Tamariti's Waka as it moves across the sky, one day at a time. Canopus is the second brightest star in the nighttime sky, with a magnitude of minus 0.74 and the brightest in the southern constellation of Carina. It is a white F-type supergiant with a mass around 10 times that of our Sun. It can be seen midway up the southeastern evening sky this month. Saturn can still be found in our evening skies at the start of the month, just to the right of Antares, and setting around 9:30, but it will disappear into the evening twilight by month's end. Venus starts November just above the pair, but continues to move eastwards against the background stars, rising through Sagittarius over the second half of the month. On the 17th, you'll find it right at the tip of the lid of the upside-down teapot asterism. Venus will be setting around 3 hours and 20 minutes after the Sun throughout November. Mars is higher still, and continues to hold its position well, moving from Sagittarius through Capricorn and setting after midnight. Mercury also makes an appearance this month. On the 20th, it moves between Saturn and Antares, forming a line of similar brightness stars along the dusk horizon, before continuing to move up away from the pair. Unfortunately, Mercury's evening appearance this month will not be as favourable as that of August this year, as Mercury will set before twilight ends. Look out for the Leonid meteor shower, which peaks around the 17th of the month, when the Earth passes through the trail of dust and debris left behind by the comet Temple-Tuttle. Whilst normally a reliable but fairly quiet meteor shower, observers have noticed that roughly every 33 years, the number of meteors observed during the shower shows a marked increase, as the Earth passes through the denser parts of the cometary debris tail. Sadly, the 2016 shower is not expected to reach these high levels, with a predicted maximum of around 10 to 20 meteors per hour, and with a bright 18-day-old moon in the sky, there will be significant interference to hamper our viewing. The radiant of the shower, from which the meteors appear to originate, is located in the constellation of Leo, which rises only a couple of hours before the Sun in our morning sky. The best time to observe the Leonid is about 2 to 3 hours before sunrise on the mornings around the peak. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Space Place at Carter Observatory.